informed every wayward crumb. He watched elderly Milanese stroll through the gallery, women arm in arm, men stopping to chat, as if time was irrelevant. To be so lucky, he thought. Should he leave immediately, or should he lay low for a day or two? That was the new urgent question. In a crowded city of 4 million people, he could vanish for as long as he wanted. He'd get a map, learn the streets, spend hours hiding in his room and hours walking the alleys. But the bloodhounds behind him would have time to regroup. Shouldn't he leave now, while they were back there scrambling and scratching their heads? Yes, he should, he decided. He paid the waiter and glanced down at his bowling shoes. They were indeed comfortable, but he couldn't wait to burn them. On a city bus, he saw an ad for an internet cafe on Via Verri. 10 minutes later, he entered the place. A sign on the wall gave the rates, €10 per hour, minimum of 30 minutes. He ordered an orange juice and paid for half an hour. The clerk nodded in the general direction of a table where a bunch of computers were waiting. 3 of the 8 were being used by people who obviously knew what they were doing. Marco was already lost. But he faked it well. He sat down, grabbed a keyboard, stared at the monitor, and wanted to pray, but plowed ahead as if he had been hacking for years. It was surprisingly easy. He went to the Quite Mail site, typed his username, Grinch456, then his passphrase, Post Hoc Ergo Propter Hoc, waited 10 seconds, and there was the message from Neil. Marco, Mikael von Thyssen is still with Rhineland Bank, now the vice president of client services. Anything else, Grinch. At exactly 7:50 Eastern Standard Time, Marco typed a message. Grinch, Marco here, live and in person. Are you there? He sipped his juice and stared at the screen. Come on, baby, make this thing work. Another sip. A lady across the table was talking to her monitor. Then the message. I'm here, loud and clear. What's up? Marco typed, They stole my Onkyo 850. There's a good chance the bad guys have it and they're picking it to pieces. Any chance they can discover you? Neil. Only if they have the username and passphrase. Do they? Marco. No, I destroyed them. There's no way they can get around a password? Neil. Not with Quite Mail. It's totally secure and encrypted. If they have the PC and nothing more, then they're out of luck. Marco. And we're completely safe now? Neil. Yes, absolutely. But what are you using now? Marco. I'm in an internet cafe renting a computer, like a real hacker. Neil. Do you want another Onkyo smartphone? Marco. No, not now. Maybe later. Here's the deal. Go see Carl Pratt. I know you don't like him, but at this point I need him. Pratt was very close to former Senator Ira Claiborne from North Carolina. Claiborne ruled the Senate Intelligence Committee for many years. I need Claiborne now. Go through Pratt. Neil. Where's Claiborne now? Marco. I don't know. I just hope he's still alive. He came from the Outer Banks of North Carolina, some pretty remote place. He retired the year after I went to federal camp. Pratt can find him. Neil. Sure, I'll do it as soon as I can sneak away. Marco. Please be careful. Watch your back. Neil. Are you okay? Marco. I'm on the run. I left Bologna this morning. I'll try to check in the same time tomorrow. Okay? Neil, keep your head down. I'll be here tomorrow. Marco signed off with a smug look. Mission accomplished. Nothing to it. Welcome to the age of high-tech wizardry and gadgetry. He made sure his exit was clean from Quite Mail, then finished his orange juice and left the cafe. He headed in the direction of the train station, stopping first at a leather shop, where he managed an even swap of Giovanni's fine briefcase for a black one of patently inferior quality. Then at a cheap jewelry store, where he paid 18 euros for a large round-faced watch with a bright red plastic band, something else to distract anyone looking for Marco Lazzari, formerly of Bologna. Then at a used bookshop, where he spent 2 euros on a well-worn hardback containing the poetry of Czesław Miłosz, all in Polish, of course, anything to confuse the bloodhounds. And finally, at a second-hand accessory store, where he bought a pair of sunglasses and a wooden cane, which he began using immediately on the sidewalk. The cane reminded him of Francesca. It also slowed him down, changed his gait. With time to spare, he shuffled into Milano Centrale and bought a ticket for Stuttgart. Whitaker got the urgent message from Langley that Luigi's safe house had been broken into, but there was absolutely nothing he could do about it. All the agents from Bologna were now in Milano, scrambling frantically. Two were at the train station, looking for the needle in the haystack. Two were at Malpensa Airport, 27 miles from downtown. Two were at Linate Airport, which was much closer and handled primarily European flights. Luigi was at the central bus station, still arguing by cell phone that perhaps Marco wasn't even in Milano. Just because he took the bus from Bologna to Modena and headed in the general direction of northwest didn't necessarily mean he was going to Milano. But Luigi's credibility at the moment was somewhat diminished, at least in Whitaker's substantial opinion, so he was banished to the bus station where he watched 10,000 people come and go. Crater got closest to the needle. For 60 euros, Marco purchased a first-class ticket in hopes that he could avoid the exposure of traveling by coach. For the ride north, the first-class car was the last one, and Marco climbed aboard at 5:30, 45 minutes before departure. He settled into his seat, hid his face as much as possible behind the sunglasses and the tan straw hat, opened the book of Polish poetry, and gazed out at the platform where passengers walked by his train. Some were barely 5 feet away, all in a hurry. Except one. The guy on the bus was back, the face from Cafe Atene, probably the sticky-fingered thug who'd grabbed his blue Silvio bag, the same bloodhound who'd been a step too slow off the bus in Modena about 11 hours ago. He was walking, but not going anywhere. His eyes were squinted, his forehead wrinkled in a deep frown. For a professional, he was much too obvious, thought Giovanni Ferro, who unfortunately now knew much more than he wanted to know about ducking and hiding and covering tracks. Crater had been told that Marco would probably head either south to Rome, where he had more options, or north to Switzerland, Germany, France, virtually the entire continent to choose from. For 5 hours, Crater had been strolling along the 12 platforms, watching as the trains came and went, mixing with the crowds, not concerned at all with who was getting off, but paying desperate attention to who was getting on. Every blue jacket of any shade or style got his attention, but he had yet to see one with the worn elbow patches. It was in the cheap black briefcase wedged between Marco's feet in seat number 70 of the first-class car to Stuttgart. Marco watched Crater amble along the platform, paying very close attention to the train whose final destination was Stuttgart. He was holding what appeared to be a ticket, and as he walked out of sight, Marco could swear that he got on the train. Marco fought the urge to get off. The door to his cabin opened, and Madame entered. Chapter 30. Once it was determined that Bachmann had disappeared and was not finally dead at the hands of someone else, a frenetic 5 hours passed before Julia Javier found the information that should have been close by. It was found in a file that had been locked away in the director's office and once guarded by Teddy Maynard himself. If Julia had ever seen the information, she could not remember. And in the chaos, she was certainly not going to admit anything. The information had come reluctantly from the FBI years earlier when Backman was being